Welcome to another exciting episode of NID's Knowledge, this one being Real Space Strategy Edition. This podcast is produced by the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, where we are advancing peace, promoting stability, and helping you to think deterrence. Each week, we will inform you about the latest in space strategy and its importance to our national defense. Following the large-scale missile attack upon Israel by Iranian military forces, several commentators use the successful intercept by air and missile defense systems of Israel, the U.S., and others, as an example of, quote, deterrence by denial, end quote. The argument being that because none of the assigned targets were destroyed by those Iranian missiles and unmanned aircraft, that the benefits of the attack had been denied. However, is this really the case? The short answer is no. But because this is a podcast dedicated to the education on real strategy, and in this case, space strategy, the short answer requires some unpacking. First, let me say how great it was to see the air and missile defenses work so well on such a large-scale attack. Aircraft, ships, and land-based missile defense batteries all did their jobs very well. They defended their homeland and military targets well. While this is a good example of integrated air and missile defenses, this is not an example of deterrence. Why? Because deterrence, by definition, is about prevention of attack. If an attack is attempted, then the credibility of deterrence was ineffective in the minds of the Iranian leadership. Second, it is important to note that defense against an attack does not relate to a deterrence by denial. The reasons include, one, the attack happened, a mass attack at that, and while defenses worked, it did not stop it from happening. Did Israel and the U.S. deny the benefits? Possibly some, but denial is more of a defensive approach than one of deterrence. In addition, as third-wave deterrence theorists like Therese Delpech and Keith Payne have articulated, the intentions of the attacks do not necessarily have to be the destruction of everything, or at least not that alone. Other aspects of attack benefits from our modern-day adversaries can include psychological impacts and even the thinning out of defensive weapon stockpiles. It could be argued that the Iranian attack has had both types of impacts, despite not achieving the destruction of Israeli targets. So this situation, while a decent example of defense, is not an example of deterrence. So if it's not deterrence, could it be tied to a deterrent framework? In this case, the answer is yes. During the Cold War, early deterrence theorists and practitioners like Hermann Kahn argued for a posture of strategic superiority, where the quality and quantity of weapon systems used as a credible threat against attackers would also be augmented by various layers of defenses, such as civil defense, air defense, and others. These defenses were part of what advocates of this deterrence theory of superiority considered as the main reason for militaries to exist, our constitutional responsibility to protect the civil population. As such, defenses were intended to protect the population as well as key military installations to preserve the common defense. Air and missile defenses were used as deterrence augmentation, known as damage limitation concepts, where despite a large-scale attack being possible should deterrence fail, ensuring the survival of the nation and its people, economic strength, and military forces were considered key. Other theorists, such as Thomas Schelling, believe that defenses and damage limitation efforts were, quote, destabilizing to the balance of terror, were holding civil populations at risk, not the military, was considered the best option for ensuring deterrence of attack. So the defenses against the Iranian attack could also be seen as damage limitation efforts as part of this defense posture against attack from all sides. So now that this recent event and trip down deterrence theory memory lane is complete, we now have some context to discuss these ideas from the space perspective. Our postures of resiliency, defenses systems, disaggregation of constellations, and the like means for deterrence by denial? Again, the answer is no. The ideas behind both disaggregation and resilience-based architectures is so that the confusion of enemies' targeting calculus, in other words, how many satellite targets would an adversary be willing to destroy if there were more than the old school 4 to 6, and instead you have constellations of 10s to 100s per constellation, One currently being tested in its early tranches is that of the Space Development Agency's Missile Warning and Tracking System. Disaggregating between systems and various satellites that can be realigned after one or a few are destroyed and disabled mean that the system can continue its mission, albeit in a degraded state. Disaggregation does have some Cold War deterrence history, when Strategic Air Command bases were distributed across the U.S. states and even overseas to ensure that a portion of the deterrent force would survive attack should deterrence fail. In space, this concept does have some merit, that of disaggregation, but it does not make it a deterrent. Why is that? Well, first, as with the earlier examples of defenses, it doesn't stop the attacks from the first place. How do we know this? Because current satellite constellations of various types, commercial, civil, and military, have been attacked routinely at lower thresholds for many years. This has been openly acknowledged by senior Space Force and National Reconnaissance Office leadership in both media and congressional hearings. As a result, these attacks have become the norm of behavior to our enemies against us, our allies, and commercial partners. Low threshold attacks include such things as electromagnetic warfare, in other words, jamming, and laser hits that illuminate or degrade capabilities on board the spacecraft or ground segments. We as a nation have not done anything of any magnitude to stop this and to maintain a status quo of non-interference, non-attack, or freedom of action in space. Rather, the U.S. and its allies have put all of their eggs into a combined diplomatic resiliency approach that is passive and ineffective. While resiliency in design is a good thing for damage limitation, it by itself does not deter attack. Attacks have happened, and kinetic attacks, while only have been seen in demonstrations, not overt attacks against U.S. targets up till now, looking at how the Chinese, Russians, and others see warfare in space to be, quote, rapid and destructive, and how deterrence is to be a proactive attack-to-deter concept, not a reactionary one, the idea that somehow dozens or hundreds of satellites will make an adversary think twice, oh, that's too much, I think I'll leave them alone now, is false. Recent reporting from Chinese writings highlight that the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, has already begun to restructure their forces for space warfighting and deterrence to target such large disaggregated constellations through what is known as system destruction. This is where the entire system, the entire constellation in multi-segments, is seen as a single target, not one of many. While this has not been played out in the real world yet, open source reports from the Chinese Commission and the annual Office of the Director of National Intelligence threat assessments have shown that China in particular have been conducting the biggest, most rapid buildup of space weapons in what is termed a multi-layered attack architecture, China's words, that are designed to kill, again in their words, disaggregated systems like Starlink and SDA's missile tracking system. So what are we denying then? What are we deterring? Nothing. Current writings and actions of the Chinese and others indicate that our reliance on passive, absorb-the-hit approach is not deterring anyone and only puts our nation and our people at greater risk of attacks, given the continued integration of technologies across terrestrial forces and critical infrastructure. We need true space deterrence forces and active defenses to deter attack upon critical space infrastructure and also to actively defend such infrastructure from attacks should deterrence fail. Basing our space strategies on faulty attempts at redefining what decades of successful theory and practice have shown to work with deterrence is a mass failure waiting to happen. It must be remedied soon, or we will be too late. But for now, this is Christopher Stone with Real Space Strategy. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to NIDS Knowledge, Real Space Strategy. The Real Space Strategy Edition is produced under NIDS Podcasting Network, a division of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. NIDS is a 501c3 organization dependent on donations to provide this podcast and bring about awareness of the peacekeeping value of U.S. strength and our national deterrence. You can catch all of our podcasts or provide feedback at thinkdeterrence.com. I want to thank our producer, Kimberly Sherrington, our sponsors, and all the fantastic members of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies for making this podcast possible. Stay tuned next week for another exciting and informative NIDS Knowledge.